You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Twitter from MLB.com, and for the first time, we do have a winner. So the Dodgers have clinched the NL West with a very convincing Clayton Kershaw outing, a one-hitter over the Giants, who they were trying to get out of the race, and they were successful in that. And now home field advantage is sort of up in the air, but it looks like they're not going to have that. The Mets will probably have home field advantage in that first round. So the Dodgers have some challenges ahead of them, but they are the champions of the NL West. Ken, let's just talk a little bit about the game and the celebration. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw had a typical Clayton Kershaw outing, a one-hitter in a game that wasn't really close. But so I guess we can't expect anything less from him, but he seemed to be just electric last night.
Yeah, he sure was. And, you know, you could kind of tell before the game. I actually walked in the stadium with him. He just looked very confident. He looked like a guy who said, enough with this messing around here, four-game losing streak, let's get it over with, and he pretty much did it by himself. He scored a lot of runs, but he wasn't going to get beat. If, you know, as long as he had one run, he was going to win this game. And even though he's up against Bumgarner, who might be the only pitcher who really could go toe-to-toe with him, in this game there was no match, really. Clayton just dominated, as he can do. And it was interesting because he came off kind of a controversial outing where he was taken out after five innings and was pretty upset about it. So I think everything just kind of lined up for him to kind of put his foot down and say, this is, you know, enough's enough. We got to get this thing over with. And he did it.
There wasn't much of a – I read the story that you wrote the other night after they lost to the Giants. And they're still feeling obviously pretty good about things. Mattingly sort of made a comment last night that seemed to be more just like getting caught up in the emotion of the thrill of winning. And, but just saying like, you know, he really didn't, it wasn't like, I mean, he sounded like he was a little worried, like if they had, you know, lost the second game against the Giants, like it becomes a little more concerning. But that wasn't, I mean, it could not have really been an issue. Was it overall? I mean, the feeling was generally like, all we have to do is win one of these games, we're fine.
Well, I think the real issue is, When the Dodgers don't have Kershaw or Greinke starting, they're sort of an average team. I mean, the statistics show. So they're not a championship-quality team. They just don't seem to have the depth of the roster and of the starting rotation. So, you know, when you get past the two of them in those next three games, you really don't know what you're going to get. So after getting swept in Colorado, and you had two shots coming up with Greinke and Kershaw, if you go past those and now your losing streak is five and you've got four more games before you get around to them, there's reason to get worried. So, you know, especially you're talking about Greinke, who had missed his previous start, and Kershaw, who had come out after five innings of a start that he really didn't look like Kershaw. So, yeah, I think there was some concern. I think they were pretty confident that between Greinke and Kershaw, they were going to get one great start. They really had a great one and a pretty good one. And so I think the way it lined up is the way it played out, you know, and that's what they were counting on. But had they lost both of those starts by Greinke and Kershaw, I think there was going to be some concern that it might actually go down to the wire.
Yeah, and that's interesting. We'll just preview just quickly just the rotation. So, you know, from what I've been reading, with Kershaw, Greinke, and then the third starter appears to be Brett Anderson, could be Alex Wood. So there are question marks there. Is that still kind of to be determined who would follow Kershaw and Greinke in the playoffs?
Yeah, very much. You know, it has been Brett Anderson has been the third starter all along since they lost Ryu and McCarthy. But he has tailed off recently. He hasn't pitched badly, but he hasn't pitched as well as he did earlier. And Wood has been kind of in and out. He has a good start and not so good start. You know, I guess if I had to guess right now, it probably would be Anderson, but they've got a week before they have to decide. Well, actually, they really have more than a week. They've got more like 10 or 11 days before they have to decide, and a lot can happen. So, you know, Mattingly didn't talk about any of that last night. I'm guessing he probably won't go into it in too much detail today or even until later next week. So, you know, whether it's that, or the whole roster, whether it's Yasiel Puig, They've got really more than a week before they have to commit to any of those things. And this isn't a management team in a front office that commits a week ahead of anything. So I think there will be plenty to mull over between now and then, both by them and the media and the fans.
And kind of along those lines, just with home field advantage still in play. And that's a big deal. And like we had talked in our last conversation about that the Dodgers are just more trying to get healthy than trying to get rested. And that's really more of what their challenge is at this point. And some guys seem to be on the mend. Kike Hernandez is back. But just how does Mattingly go from here? Because they still need to, of course, they're trying to win games all the time, but they still really need to be making a push. Yet you do want to sort of be a little bit prepared also for the playoffs. So do you see anything kind of changing in that way, or will it sort of be the same guys continuing to finish out the season?
Well, in the past, he has put a priority on resting players and getting them healthy over going for the home field advantage. The only difference maybe this year is that they've played so poorly on the road. That said, they were swept by the Mets at home. Two out of three. They lost two out of three by the Mets at home. So they didn't play that well against the Mets at home either. I think it's Mattingly's nature, really, when push comes to shove, he goes for resting and healing up his players. And the Mets do have the tiebreaker. So even though it appears that they're only one game behind at this point, it's actually two games behind it. So they're running out of time, and really what's going to have to happen is the Mets are going to have to collapse, really, at the end for the Dodgers to overtake them for the home field advantage. So a lot of that is really out of their hands.
So we knew this was coming. It's not like this is a huge shock, but it's now official. So the Giants are no longer in the postseason race, and they lost to the Dodgers, who, of course, clinched on their field. So can you just talk about just that whole scene and kind of how the team was after and just in the minutes after the game was over, just sort of what the feeling was among the team?
Yeah, it was an interesting scene. For one thing, the Giants management handled it with class. They put on the, you know, on the big screen and on the scoreboard, congratulations, congratulations to the Los Angeles Dodgers, 2015 NL West champs, something like that. And then I think there was a little hashtag, respect the rivalry. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Giants players, you know, some left the dugout right away. A few lingered on and just to watch. They couldn't be watching with all that envy, all that much envy, because the Giants have won three World Series in the previous 5 years. So, but I think some of them wanted to take in the scene. Madison Bumgarner was one guy who said, you know, it'll give him fuel. That's the word he used, fuel for the off season. So, you know, there was kind of a mixed bag there. But for the most part, the Giants just handled it. They were expecting this too, I think, in the backs of their minds. So they were able to, that helped them be able to handle this.
Yeah, Bruce Bochy, and I'm always so entertained by him in so many ways, but I love that he just really summed up the season and why the Giants are not playing in the playoffs. He said, four concussions and three obliques.
Yep.
It really does come down to, I found the statistic that not only did Hunter Pence only play in like 60 games, or less than that, but the team was 34-17 when Pence started, and it's amazing that one person can really affect a team that way. But those two things that Bochy said about the concussion, the obliques, and the Pence there really isn't much to say beyond that, is there?
You know, there really isn't. The injuries pretty much permeated every single facet of the team's play, except maybe relief pitching. I mean, a couple of relievers were a little dinged up here and there, but it's not as if they lost like Santiago Casilla, their closer, for a while. I mean, that would have been like approximating what the Giants lost when they lost Pence. You know, just, you know, one player can make a big difference in what they, as they like to say, lengthening the lineup. and, you know, just taking away a Pence did so much because it robbed Buster Posey of protection and made the people who follow Pence in the order, you know, have to, you know, maybe step up one notch in the order and, you know, step up literally and figuratively, and they can't always do that. I mean, Brandon Crawford was hitting 290, close to 300. He's going to end up the year close to 250, you know, and that's a direct effect of not having Hunter around.
Yeah, I've been arguing, you know, some people don't see it quite as strongly as I do, but you really are only as good as the people that are hitting around you. And I think we've talked about this before. I was always kind of amazed what Hunter was able to do in Houston in his last year or so there, because he had nothing around him. And he was still hitting really well. But it is so predicated on, I mean, if you're having a great year and you're a really good player, that's going to come through. But it really is, when you take a big element out of the lineup, I mean, look what happened to the A's when Cespedes got traded. And you know, people say, well, it's not because of that. I mean, it has to absolutely be affecting that because of how guys around you are pitched.
Yeah, don't get me started on Cespedes. We'll be on an hour-long rant. That's one particular case where, man, you can just see the effects a player has beyond the statistics. And that was another thing about Hunter. He is, as you know, he is such a great team, and I don't use that word lightly, but it does apply. Great team leader.
Yes.
He's just a great example on the field to younger players, guys who aren't playing, because he plays. He got that big, you know, 5-year, $90 million contract a couple years ago, and he ended up playing. Since then, he plays even harder, if such a thing is possible. You know, guys like that are, you know, have a lot of character and mean a lot to the team. You know, their efforts and their attitudes resonate, and that's what the Giants lost. Even though he could cheer from the sidelines, it's not the same as having him in the lineup.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about looking ahead, maybe this offseason. So Tim Lincecum, he has optimism that he would be ready and to go for spring training. He's a free agent, obviously, after this season. There seems to be a lot of people that don't really want to say a whole lot on this now because the Giants have to want him back. What he's meant to this franchise, oh, my goodness. I mean, you can't even put words into what he's meant for this franchise. So does that become a sensitive topic? I mean, do you think that the Giants will want him back? Do you think that they'll be able to come to some sort of agreement?
Sure. I think maybe for a low-base, high-incentive-type contract, you know, it'll be no risk for either side, and I just think that's going to happen. But he has to prove, as he indicated yesterday, he has to prove that he can. First, he has to be able to walk again. I'm not trying to make light of this situation, but
sure,
he's got to be able to do real life stuff, you know, and then worry about pitching. But his surgeon was Mark Philippon is very positive that Tim can make a full recovery, and I believe what the doctor says.
Here for my final chat of the regular season and the season with Corey Brock, who covers the Padres. And Corey, I want to look a little bit ahead. Well, the last time we're ever going to look ahead. They end the season, if I'm not mistaken, at the Dodgers. So 3 games in L.A. To end the season. And I've asked some of the other reporters who are covering non-contending teams but might be able to, you know, be involved in playoff implications. And, of course, the Dodgers have clinched, but they haven't clinched home field advantage, and they probably are not going to. But if that is still in play, the Padres feel the need to have that whole integrity of the game thing and put out a team that could, you know, actually win the game if they want to maybe try out some young guys instead.
Yeah, there's a joke there somewhere, Allison. But, I think in terms of the team they're going to put out on the field, I think it kind of boils down more or less to the pitching, how they're going to line that up. But, you know, as it stands, the first 2 games of the series, they're getting a look at a couple of young guys, Casey Kelly and Robbie Erlin. You know, these are kind of extended auditions for 2016. And, you know, nothing there is going to change. I think the only thing that could change is maybe on that final Sunday, James Shields is set to throw, and maybe they'll have a kind of truncated start for him, maybe dial him back to 5 innings or so and let the rest of the staff fill that thing out. But, I think, you know, they were kind of waiting to see exactly what was happening with this Dodgers-Giants series. The Dodgers obviously clinched the West. So they're in good shape there. So I think it'll be sort of business as usual for the Padres.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that, trying to affect home field is really anything that the Padres need to be worried about, concerned about, or have any responsibility in whatsoever. So we've talked a lot about, let's face it, we've probably beaten to death every subject that we could possibly come up with the last couple of weeks. So I want to talk about Vic Enberg, who has announced that next year will be his final year as a broadcaster for the Padres, or I guess as a broadcaster in general. He's stepping down. He's 80 years old, and he would like to be doing some other things with his life and not doing so much baseball. So, he has done so much. He has been an announcer forever for many sports. Of course, the Tournament of Roses Parade, he was an announcer for that. He's called 8 Super Bowls. What's his legacy? What is his legacy in baseball? How do you know him? How do you kind of view him in the scope of broadcasting?
Yeah, and this is no knock on Dick, but probably not in a baseball sense, but probably for all the other things that you mentioned, Allison. I think that's sort of when we were all kind of introduced to Vic Enberg, people of our generation, watching him broadcast these sort of iconic events, those games on New Year's Day or Final Fours, and just real momentous sporting occasions. And this guy was there for quite a few of them. So I think it's the overall picture. Sure, he was a Ford C. Frick winner this year, but I think it's you have to look with guys like this, guys that have been doing it forever. You got to look at the entire body of work and look at how many of the most iconic sporting events of the last half century this guy was at and was behind the microphone and bringing that information and telling that story to so many people across so many different fronts and different age groups and all that. And I think that's why he's had so much success and why he continues to be remembered as the greatest, because he had a sort of that far-reaching effect, for people of a few different generations.
And so we've all heard the reports, and of course nothing's been confirmed by anybody, but Don Orsillo, who became very famous outside of Boston for basically being told by the Red Sox he's not going to be their announcer anymore after the season, and it appears that he is headed that way. I guess it would be next year, after Enberg retires. So, are you guys hearing the same thing out there? And I guess that would be a huge pickup for them if that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a done deal, Allison. I think we'll have an announcement here fairly shortly. Of course, team president and CEO Mike Gee, spent about 8 years with the Red Sox, the last 7 as a COO. So, he's got some Red Sox blood in him and certainly understands what Don Orsillo meant to that community, and a guy that was behind the mic for maybe some of the most momentous and important games in franchise history during his 15 or so years with the Red Sox. So, I think they're going to get an opportunity. They're going to dial back Dick Enberg's schedule a little bit in that final year, and I think they're going to get an opportunity to pair him up with Mark Grant, who for my money is really good, and not just as a former player, but just as a guy that brings some levity and humor to the booth. And I think both those guys playing off each other is going to be a real dynamic pairing.
Yeah. Mark Grant, I rarely listen to Padres broadcast because I don't live anywhere near there, so I'm not really getting those broadcasts. But when I do hear them, he really is special. I don't know that he gets enough credit for how entertaining he makes these broadcasts. And that's just a natural gift. You can't make yourself be funny. You either are or you aren't. And Grant certainly, he's really, really high energy, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And I think these analyst jobs, the fabric of them have kind of shifted over time a little bit, Allison, maybe even just in the last 10 years, where you don't necessarily need to stick an ex-jock back there just to have one. This guy could bring the perspective of having been a major league pitcher, having been a Padres pitcher, and break down the nuts and bolts on that. But in the next sense, he could be telling some jokes, making fun of himself. He's big on that. And, this is the entertainment business. And I sometimes think that we kind of lose sight of that on occasion. And, he does a really good job of keeping it loose. Just for me, he's just really a real ideal fit in the booth, just because of the different things that he could bring and just sort of the different groups of people that he could resonate with.
Steve. While I'm so sad that we won't be doing our weekly chats for at least 3 weeks, we do have some things to wrap up. So even though this has been a disappointing season for the Diamondbacks and that they are not headed to the postseason. They could, however, need to be stepping up to their A game this weekend if there are playoff implications for the Houston Astros, and there might not be by then, but we'll get to that part. So let's talk about the pitching a little bit. And I saw that you had the rotation for the first two games of that series and then sort of Sunday TBD, depending on the Astros.
Yeah, Chip Hale wants to make sure that, you know, if the game on Sunday matters in the postseason chase, that the Diamondbacks, you know, throw one of their better pitchers in Robbie Ray as opposed to turning it into a bullpen day or getting a look at another young pitcher. So, you know, he's being very careful about saying, you know, who's going to start that game until he sees exactly where things stand with the Astros. They feel like, you know, same thing they did when they were, you know, really the way they've played things recently, they have not used a ton of young guys in the starting lineup. It's been mainly their regular starting lineup, in part because they're trying to win as many games as they can, and also because their everyday lineup is so young as it is that, you know, there really aren't a lot of young position players to look at right now.
Yeah, I was looking at them, just going through some of the statistics of some of the individual players, and A.J. Pollock, I feel like we just need to give him a shout-out over his – okay, when I was taking these notes, which was, I think, yesterday or the day before, over his last 34 games, he had been hitting .346 with 9 doubles, 7 home runs, 25 RBIs. So, oh, my goodness, that was a pretty awesome run.
Yeah, absolutely. And if Paul Goldschmidt gets overshadowed because he plays in Arizona, A.J. Pollock gets overshadowed because not only does he play in Arizona, but he plays behind Paul Goldschmidt. So a lot of times Goldschmidt gets the attention that people throw this way. But he has, A.J., that is, has really played well this year and really kind of taken his game to another level, especially offensively. And as the season's gone on, he's certainly gotten stronger. And when Goldschmidt was struggling a little bit in August, you know, AJ didn't have any drop off, and as you just showed his numbers as of late, he's really finishing the season strong.
Okay, so I want to go through, and there's a lot of awards that are given out after the season, and the baseball writers get together and they vote on their awards. And I want to just kind of have a casual conversation about, like, I want you to name some of these award winners if you were the only one voting and you were running the world. Who would you be voting for? So, okay, MVP, I think it's pretty set. But go ahead and give me your MVP.
Yeah, you know, I give it to Goldschmidt simply because, you know, he just continues to put up, you know, amazing numbers. And I feel like Pollock needs a shout out there to say that, you know, he's also had a fantastic year. And on a lot of other teams, maybe he would be the MVP. But Goldschmidt, just what he brings every day, defensively and offensively, and leadership in the clubhouse, he would have to be my MVP.
Okay, pitcher of the year.
Pitcher of the year, that's a great question. And I think that I almost have to give that to Brad Ziegler, just given the success he's had as a closer. He's got the longest, as we're speaking right now, the longest consecutive save streak going in the majors. Really stepped in and filled a hole for them in the closer's role. And, you know, I don't know how many more games they would be behind had they not had him. So I would go with, I know normally a starter goes in that spot, but I would say Brad Ziegler. Okay.
And I'm here with a little bit of sadness because I'm here with my friend Thomas Harding, and we are commiserating over the fact that this is our last podcast of the regular season of 2015. And Thomas, I thought it was very cool that the Rockies said basically to the Dodgers, go do something on someone else's lawn, leave us alone, in that
yeah.
The Dodgers were not able to clinch the division when they were in Colorado. So that's got to be kind of nice for the team, even though this has been, as we know, a pretty miserable season.
Yes, it has been. And a lot of times, I mean, I've been around veteran teams that lose, and sometimes you get that, gee, what difference does it make? I'm just trying to get through this. I hope you have a nice celebration. And I think with the Rockies, they have enough players with something to prove that they played pretty well against the Dodgers. I mean, and when I talk, and it's funny too, because it gives me a real gauge of the playoffs. When I talked to Carlos Gonzalez after they ended up sweeping the Dodgers, he's like, listen, we played every bit as hard against Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh is really good. And that was the sense that I had, was that that was a reflection of the quality of the teams. I really don't believe
that the Dodgers are a team that could have competed in the National League Central this year. Just not enough lineup-wise, and their bullpen was so shaky that I think it's going to end up hurting them in the playoffs. They're about to play the Mets, who have really good pitching, and if those guys don't get spooked by the moment and they're able to do enough against Kershaw and Greinke, I'm expecting the Mets to beat the Dodgers in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's that sentiment. I mean, we were just talking to Ken Gernick about the Dodgers, and Don Mattingly was saying last night, and no, we're not turning this into a Dodgers podcast, but Don Mattingly was saying last night that he was getting a little nervous, that they really needed to win that game because if it had gone beyond those two pitchers, then it could have come down to the wire. It's very unusual to see a playoff team with only two good pitchers and not that great of a bullpen get this far.
Yeah, it is unusual to see a team with not that great a bullpen get this far, which to me that says a lot about the National League West this season. However, I will say, I mean, we watched, who was it, the Arizona Diamondbacks win a World Series essentially with two pitchers. And when I watched the San Francisco Giants over the years, at times their offense has come through when it's mattered, but it's not an offense I'm afraid of. That is the dangerous thing about the playoffs, is that with off days and all, you can end up winning the World Series with not a complete team. But with the Dodgers, they're going to have to find a way to win without dealing with their bullpen, because their bullpen, you can't trust it.
No, absolutely. I'm 100% agreeing with you. So getting back to the Rockies for a quick second, let's talk about Jose Reyes a little bit. He's got some aches and pains down the stretch here, and just like, can you just tell us a little bit about what's going on with that? And then what do you forecast? I mean, if you could look into a crystal ball and make millions and millions of dollars by knowing exactly what's going to happen with him this winter and beyond, what would you say?
I think that they will find a way to deal him this winter. I don't really know how, but they'll find a way to deal him this winter. It could be to a team that is in bad need of a shortstop that thinks that he could help push them ahead, or even a good team that may need a second baseman. They may start segueing him into another position to end his career. He's had some Achilles tendon soreness, but he was able to return for Tuesday night's game against the Diamondbacks in Arizona. So that was a good thing. He did want to return. He does want to finish the season on the field. I like Jose Reyes as an individual. He has really fit in well with some of the younger guys here. The question for him will be, is he the type of guy that can win, that can make a team a winner? I don't think that opportunity necessarily exists in Colorado, because they do have some of the younger guys, but stranger things have happened. I mean, that's a hard contract to move. If the Rockies move, they're already paying quite a bit of Tulowitzki, but if the Rockies move some of that, they're going to have to eat into those savings to pay some of the Reyes contract. So it's going to be strange, but I think they'll find a way to move him. They may not get what they really want for him, but that's okay, because they have Trevor Story coming up through the minors. They do have Christian Adames, who is playing in the major leagues right now, and Daniel Descalzo, he's under contract for another year. He could be kind of a placeholder if a couple of guys need a little bit of extra time. So they really are set enough to go in the next season with shortstops if they don't have Jose Reyes on the team.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.